two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Mara, I'm listening to your story, and it's amazing that you're here today to talk to us. I mean, and all the things that have gone on, there's had to be some powerful things on your side to help you get to this point. One of them would have to be you. When did it all fall apart for you?
I think when I finally realized, because they kept playing around with the idea that my parents, like, we never knew the amount of time that they had to, like, be there. Mm. And I don't know. Sometimes I want to be, like, pissed off at my mom about it. But I think in her mind, she maybe was even lying to herself that that's how much time she was going to have to be there. But she would always just be like, just stay okay. Like, we'll all be together again and things will be okay. And by the time I was 21, that 10 years just seemed so far away. And I realized, like, how many graduations she was going to miss, or just how many even dinners or birthdays, just all of the different things that she had already missed up to that point. And, like, how much more was it going to be? And, like, how long am I going to be pissed about it? Like, that's really how my pattern was. And I ended up thinking, like, as long as I can be. Like, I'm really angry. I'm really broken, I guess, in the sense that I didn't really care about seeing my brothers towards the end. And we had court order days that we could see each other, and they couldn't take that away. And it's really hard when you have that many different houses to coordinate, like, what day you can all meet for, like, this specific time. And then the families would be like, hey, don't talk about this, or hey, don't tell them that. And I didn't get it. I would just be like, why don't you want them to know who they are? Like, that's kind of how I talked about it to them. And I just felt really offended that because I had tattoos, or because I didn't date guys at this point anymore, I just was left out because they grew up Mormon now. They went back, some of them went back to the LDS church. And I always just thought that it was just those reasons, because of their views on religion or their views of how they wanted their family, that, like, me talking about our past wasn't going to help them. And it took all of us sitting in a therapy session together and kind of breaking down what age-appropriate things meant. And something clicked in my mind. And I remember sitting there thinking, like, they're just throwing out these big words, until I decided, like, hey, I've had enough. And I started reading self-help books, and I started going to meetings, and people started to talk about the same things. And then people that looked like me, people that had similar paths as me, started talking about how they felt, or, like, what I hated when someone was like, oh yeah, well, because of your abusive past or your trauma. Like, if someone said that to me, I would avoid them at all cost. And I would just be like, you're not going to put me in that box. Like, you're not going to put me in a box.
Did that make you feel vulnerable?
I think so, but more so that I didn't want to be seen as, like, a pity case, or like just another case number. And that's what I was since 8 years old.
What was the turning point for you in your addiction that made you decide? Because I know for me, I had a clicking point. Okay, this is it. I'm done.
Right.
What was your turning point, and what happened to make you say, I think I'm done?
So I think reconnecting with my siblings after not seeing them for 5 years, just because my addiction was so bad. Like, all of the things that I, like, was so mad at my mom about for not showing up. Realizing I missed graduations, And then seeing my brother mentally ill because of meth.
Oh.
That, I was like, I taught him that. Because he was who I called when I was psychotic, you know. And you know those times where you just are so certain somebody's like talking to you, or you just haven't slept for 5 days. And he was who I was, who he called then. And I remember thinking, okay, if I can trick him into going into these AA meetings with me, maybe like he's not that far off that he'll come right back. And that's not what happened. I ended up going to these meetings, and I think for the first time ever, just listening, truly listening without my opinions that I think I had about like being a gangster or like coming from like drug dealing parents, or even the fact that I was like a woman doing drugs. Just all of the little things I think that I heard my parents saying I had kind of ended up becoming without knowing. And then when I saw it mirrored in my brother, it just hurt. It hurt different. And I thought, okay, we're going to go to this many meetings. And he was like, cool, we can try that. He's like, but I need you to start coming to a gym with me. Because I had let my weight shoot up. I think I was 220 and just really pissed and not happy, but I wasn't doing drugs. But I still was isolating. I still was staying away from every single like point of like community or any type of connection because I was so worried about him. And we ended up finding Fit to Recover. I think I was at the Alano Club. Ian came in to talk about this gym, and I remember laughing. I was like, this guy really thinks he's going to get people that are detoxing to come and do burpees. Like, what a crazy thought. And I never went. My brother went to the opening. I didn't go. And then he waited a year until he was like, hey, we should try that gym again, and I'll go to 2 meetings a week with you. He's like, you do 2 workouts with me, I'll do 2 meetings with you. And I was living downtown right by the Haven, and that was walking distance for me. And I remember going in there for their 10 o'clock meeting and just hearing some of the rawest, like realest people being vulnerable. And I never saw that. Like all these guys that had done however many years in prison, all tattooed, crying. And I was like, oh my God. Like, and something inside of me was like, when is the last time that I cried? Like alone? When is the last time I've ever cried in front of people?
Was that the first time you were around people that you identified with but were being vulnerable and being honest?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it was that 10 o'clock meeting at the Haven in 2015 that something that I was ready to listen. Because I've heard stuff. I have researched. I'm a very big believer that if you do enough research, maybe you could figure out like what's going on with you and not have to blow everything up. And my brother ended up going back out, and not really, AA wasn't his thing. And he had made a comment to me. He's like, well, maybe like you're more like those people and I'm not. And I was like, okay, cool. And I didn't fight him on it. I didn't care. And I still kept going to that meeting. And then I started to meet people that I realized just wanted to know who I was without needing anything from me. That never asked me for a single thing.
No judgment.
That would actually offer like, hey, if you need a ride, or hey, like, there's this sober softball team. And I think I was lucky enough, I think, to be so defeated by the time I had such a great opportunity of Fit to Recover. That was my first stepping stone that I actually committed to showing up somewhere every day for, I think, the first 6 months. Even if I wasn't working out, I would go and clean off kettlebells, or I would go and weed outside the little garden that they have. And I met Rachel Santizo there, and she told me the only way that she stayed sober was service. So I was like, okay, what does that mean? And I got so much, I guess, like embarrassment to ask things that like I didn't know. Like I didn't want to seem like
naive.
I wasn't aware, you know, like that I didn't know day-to-day things. Like, what anxiety was. I just thought that I had like severe heartburn when I would go around certain things, or I would be like, what did I just eat that like my heart like hurts and my hands are sweaty?
You didn't know it was anxiety.
And I didn't know it was just such a simple thing. If you just do some breathing techniques, like, hey, like you'll be okay. Or just walking through the fear of just being like, hey, I don't know. I never wanted to be that person.
But when you think about it, Dr. Matt, really addiction is a lot of unknown. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of us don't know what's going on. A lot of times we're trying to self-medicate or figure things out. Right. But it's not really in our nature. I mean, some people are very inquisitive by nature, but other people are just, they don't want, I'm with you.
I think a lot of it is feeling vulnerable and feeling naive. You don't want to be that guy who doesn't know something.
Like, how do you know what anxiety is?
Right. And we fear what other people's judgments are going to be. And what it sounds like what you're saying and what I think was your experience, and so many people who are in recovery have this experience, is the non-judgmental, just genuine desire to connect and be helpful. And in some settings, you ask what's anxiety, somebody might scoff at you, but not in that setting. In that setting, they're there to be helpful and supportive. And
so you signed up for 6 months at Fit to Recover. You said you were going to do this. Before you got to Fit to Recover, you said you were staying at the Haven House. Did you?
Oh, no, I was staying near it. I never stayed at the Haven. It was just walking distance I had to go.
Did you ever do a recovery center or any of those things?
No. I never had that opportunity. I wasn't really working. I didn't have insurance. And I didn't even know that there were, like, grants and other ways around to get into, like, a treatment center or to find a day treatment or anything like that. I just was very fortunate that my partner that I'm still with now, Adrian, she has worked in the medical field, and she was very open and, like, one of the most loving human beings that I've ever met. And even with her, she would just want to talk, and I'd be like, where is this going? Like, what does she think I'm doing? Like, and I didn't unpack my stuff, I think, for like a solid 6-7 months of living with her. And I think from the time I was maybe 19, 20 years old, I never had more things that couldn't fit in one duffel bag. And I just had that there in case I just didn't.
A to-go bag.
I just wanted to just go all the time, and I was okay with it for the last.
I think that bag's a great analogy or a metaphor of your emotional self, because from a very young age, it sounds like you were packed up and closed off and ready to run, so to speak, and protecting yourself all the time from other people. So that bag was really just kind of a metaphor of who you were.
Right. And she, Adrian taught me, I think she was my first person that ever just taught me, like, you have to love somebody and let them be who they are, because she never once was like, hey, don't do drugs. Hey, don't drink. Never once did she say that to me. The only thing she ever said was, I know your world is drugs and that kind of stuff, but like sometimes I like to peek over there, but that's not anywhere I would ever stay. She's like, so if you want anything like this to continue, she's like, that's up to you. And that was the only thing that she ever said. And I think she was probably the first person that I remember just letting me be me.
In fact, that little boundary or statement that she set, that was about her, right? She wasn't even asking you to change. She was just saying, this is where I'm at, and I like you, but this is where I'm at. And that, but still allowing you the latitude to make your own choices. Yeah.
Right. And she never made me feel like this is what you need to do or I'm leaving. And I think that gave me the room to like explore. And I didn't work for the first while that I was with her. I was going to 2 or 3 meetings a day trying to find something that I thought I could hear to tell my brother. Like, that really was my end game at the beginning.
Trying to hook him back into sobriety.
If I knew the right words, I thought. Like, if I know the right words or if I'm living the right life, he's going to be like, oh, hey, I want to do this too. And between all of that, I found Tammy's meditation group, which that led for me to go into this really amazing all women's retreat that she does from a Friday to Sunday. And you literally just go there and find out like what really is your stuff and what else is just generational trauma that maybe your parents didn't know they were passing on to you. And when I did that, that made me want to know more about what is it like for my brothers to feel like, because they got adopted. Like, I knew my mom for a little bit, you know, like she was a good mom to me. But they never got that. And at first I'm like, why won't you guys talk to her? Why don't you text her when she writes you? Like, write her back on Facebook. It's going to take you 2 seconds. Until I realized, like, that's none of my business. And they're allowed to be as angry or feel whatever they want to feel because they haven't escaped with drugs and alcohol. Like, they've literally had to just feel all of those things. And I put up a wall for so long that when I did do that retreat, I think I felt every single feeling that I tried to mask with drugs and alcohol all at once. And I remember at one point looking over at her and being like, hey, you know what? Like, this isn't for me. Like, I don't want to see what those traumas are. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see what that pain's going to feel like. I would rather just not feel. And she just laughed. Like, she just started laughing. And she's like, well, you're already doing it. She's like, your day-to-day thing. She's like, the way that you're wanting to talk to your siblings, the way that you reach out to those people that are struggling, she's like, that's you helping you. She's like, I'm just here for you to figure out your own direction. And since then, I realized that, like, you don't just have to go to AA. Like, you don't just have to go to a treatment center. And if you want to be spiritual, that can look however you want. And I never knew that. I don't know where along the lines that got really blurred for me. Like, I thought either you're all in being LDS or being Catholic and, like, you don't make mistakes. Like, in my mind, I just thought, okay, all of these people have these nice houses, these nice cars, and I sold enough drugs to get all of those things, but I still had that hole inside of me that I wanted my family together, that I wanted it to look a certain way. And down the line, we've gotten together and it looks really weird because everybody has their own ideas of what happened and, like, what their pain was. And sometimes
with all those different ages, mm-hmm. you guys really did have different experiences, right? Though, right?
And hearing them now, not everybody wants to talk about it, but the ones that do, like, we've shared about the same days. Like, one example is my brother Jesse on his birthday. He thought nobody wanted to celebrate his birthday. He was so young that he didn't realize my dad hadn't been home in 2 or 3 weeks, shows up without the car on some bullet bike, and we needed to go and shop for his birthday. And, like, how are we all going to fit on that bullet bike? And he left in a Suburban and came back on a bike. And so that started this huge fight since the morning. My brothers weren't awake and they all woke up to fighting. Mm. And then my family splitting up after that.
So he took that personally.
I think he thought that it was just about him.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to celebrate him. But then towards the end of the night, everybody just pretending like everything was fine. And we're singing him happy birthday at 8 o'clock at night and opening presents. Like, there wasn't this huge, like, blow up. Hmm. And I don't know. I think now, before, I used to be really ashamed to, like, talk about my parents going to prison or any type of abuse or trauma that's happened. But I don't think that I would be able to help the people that I get to today, or even just have the space to listen to whoever and whatever they have to say and not think, like, well, this is what happened to me, and, like, get over it.
Can I ask, where's all the family now?
All of my brothers live here in between, like, Logan and Salt Lake. So most of them are up in Davis County. And then two brothers live, one of my brothers in Logan. And then I am not sure about my brother Eddie, but I think he's somewhere around.
And mom and dad?
My dad lives in Tooele, and then my mom is in Mexico. So they split. They're not together anymore.
And they were released in 2017?
No. So my dad got released first because he did more programs, or I'm not sure what he did. He got released maybe 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then my mom a year after that. And she's been in Mexico the whole time. So I haven't seen her since 2007.
Do you communicate with either one of your parents?
Here and there. Mm-hmm. We try, like, with my mom more. I have more, like, leeway with her. Just because, like, she was my constant in my life and my dad just was not there. So I just, in a sense, I think I still feel pissed off because he got out of jail, is married now with a new lady and has, like, this whole new family. Mm. And in my mind, I'm like, you know what? Like, you don't deserve to be happy. But my brother Jesse went and hung out with him for Father's Day and he was helping me work the other day. And he was like, hey, he's like, you know, he's like, I've been pissed off like you are too. He's like, but he's like, we should let it go. And, like, he should deserve to be happy too.
So your dad's made some positive changes, mm-hmm. but that's hard because I know a lot of people in your situation will have the feeling like, well, why didn't he do that for me? And
right.
Why didn't he do that for our family when we were growing up? He's doing it now
right.
with a new family, and I can see how that's a lot to unpack and try to
right.
process to let go of that anger and that resentment.
And he had this whole idea of I went to visit him the first day he got back because he was, I think, in California. And when he got sent to Utah to a halfway house, he needed, like, essentials, just shaving cream, shampoo, stuff like that. And he called me, and I didn't hesitate. I was like, absolutely. Like, I'll be there. Like, what size are you? I'll bring you some clothes. And when I go there, I don't know what I was expecting from him, but his reaction to me was like, hey, you know what? I know a lot of you are pissed off at me. I've served my time, and like, if you can't get over it, then I don't care. Mm. And I think I wanted maybe an apology, even like, hey, I'm sorry. Sure. And right. I think I would have been okay with it. And I still talk to him, and I'm still trying to figure out my bond with him. But he had promised my daughter like a year and a half ago that she could come here and live with him, and that he would take care of all the financials and everything like that. And when she got here, that didn't happen because this is me assuming. I don't want to just say, but I'm guessing his wife wasn't on board with it. And I didn't know that. And I had talked to her daughter about it. And since then, he called me back and was like, hey, you know what? Like, I know I said I was going to help you bring her here, but like, that's not something I can do. And I had already gotten her excited about that. And she ended up coming here last July or June. I think it was the end of June last year.
From your sister's house?
From Mexico.
Oh, from Mexico.
From Mexico. She ended up coming here. My sister now lives in Mexico. But she ended up staying. Like, I think I put in enough work on myself. And my sister is having some difficulties over there with her family that she didn't want to go back. And that caused a little bit of a fight with me and my girlfriend. And we're sort of kind of trying to deal with that and, like, step-parenting and... I didn't really talk to her about it. I didn't take her feelings into consideration. I was going to say I didn't think, but I know I didn't. I didn't take her feelings into consideration whatsoever. And I remember every single time I would feel defeated, I would remember the reason I'm going to stay sober was for her. And I think I'm a very big believer in prayer. And I think I've prayed for all of the things that I have right now, even though I forget sometimes when it's hard. Like, I wanted to be here. I wanted to be to the point where I wasn't obsessing about drugs. I wanted to be in a point where I could work for myself and give back. Like, that's one of the biggest things that I've learned through all of this is if I'm not giving back, like, what I've learned, I shut down. And even if I'm not doing those drugs, I still act like that person. Like, I'm still really rude to people for no reason. And
they call it being a dry drunk. You know, I mean, yeah. You've still got all the attributes. You're just not drunk.
You're sober, but you're surly,
you're mad.
Person.
Yeah.
And what's crazy about, and after I did that retreat with Tammy, she just give me this smile. And I'm like, what makes you so happy? Like, why are you smiling at me like that? And she gave me a hug and she's like, I don't think you're aware. She's like, of the miracle you're about to live. And I was pissed because I had to be so vulnerable in front of so many women that I didn't know. And I was like, yeah, okay, like, whatever. Just let's get this over with. I want to go home. I'm never coming back here.
Do you feel like your life is a miracle at this point?
Absolutely, because anytime she calls me, even though everything inside of me is like, no, do not go up there, I do, without hesitation. And it's been such a great experience because every single time I learn a little bit more about myself. Even though I go up there and be of service for other women, I get to see like maybe how I've made people feel or the other side of things that I never thought I would see. Like, I never thought I would be able to put myself in somebody's shoes because in early recovery, people told me, never touch a drink, never do this, never that, and you have to go to AA every day and you have to do all of these things. And that just seemed crazy to me that, like, you had to keep doing these things. And I was like, why am I going to lose one addiction to be addicted to this crazy group of people that I don't even know? And half of the time I thought people were just up there because they like to hear themselves talk.
And there are some of that.
And sure. That's just what I assumed about everybody, though. I didn't want to be open to thinking that people that have money or people that have houses get to have problems. Like, in my mind, I was like, you have everything you need. Like,
their lives look perfect on the outside.
And it's taken 5 years for me to realize that, like, we all feel the same. Regardless of if your problem is tiny or not, like, that's the biggest problem in somebody's life. And getting to work with people at treatment centers at Fit to Recover, you see all the different dynamics. Like, you can see somebody that's willing to ride their bike from North Salt Lake to 13th South to get in a good workout. Or you'll see a lady that can take a break during her lunch break, pull up in a Range Rover, and I've had the most meaningful conversations with all people there.
So for those who don't know, Fit to Recovery, it's kind of like – I had to explain it, it's where CrossFit meets recovery.
Yeah.
And so basically when we'd go there, when I was in recovery, you'd go there and you'd start with a circle, you'd set good intentions, and then you get a good workout, break a sweat, and push yourself to do things that you didn't think you could do. And if you couldn't do it, it's okay to step by and sit back and not do it. But you build a community. Then afterwards you sit down and you circle up again and you talk about how it was for you. And you find out, you start to build the community and bonding. And they do all kinds of cool stuff at Fit to Recover. They have AA meetings. They have meal prep programs. They have classes throughout the day, right?
Yeah. The coolest thing that they've just started that I think people aren't aware of is they have a really cool music program there. Tony is who runs it, and Ben helps her. And he's put out an album since. And if it's so many different types of things that you can go in there and do if fitness isn't your thing. You can cook, you can do other types of creative art or service. It's one of the things that I think helped me open up, because I don't think you really have the mental capacity to be like, oh my gosh, I'm being vulnerable, because the endorphins are already going and you just feel so good. Like, you can go in there crying, and at the beginning I would go in there and just be so defeated, and they would be like, say one thing you're grateful for, and I would just couldn't think of a single thing, and I would just lie, and I would just think of the first thing that came to mind, and it wasn't true. But towards the end of the class, when you had to go and like kind of be like, okay, how are you now, every single time at the end I was 100% honest, and it always ended up with my mood being a little bit better.
And it sounds like you are a good example of somebody who's been sort of the architect of their own recovery. You did a lot of research. You read a lot of books. You were searching for answers instead of just trying to find a one-size-fits-all sort of recovery. And it sounds like this program is sort of like that as well. They offer lots
right,
of different
things. Right. I think it's a really good stepping stone if you feel awkward like I did to talk to other people, or if you just need support. You don't even have to be an addict to come in there, because if you think about it, I think every single person is recovering from something, especially right now with COVID going. And I've seen my own mental health go down the drain because my routine got messed up. And now it's that much harder. I just remember the first 2 weeks of me going into Fit to Recover and not being able to move because I don't know how to do things halfway. I started going every day, or six times a week, just because it was like the new thing, so that I didn't have to think about how many things I messed up that I had to like fix. And now I go back and I'll sometimes read my journals, because I was lucky enough to get a really good sponsor that told me, hey, wake up and just write 10 things that you're grateful for. And I remember sitting there the first year and just thinking like, what a dumb like thing, but I would do it. I just did all of the things. Like, if my first instinct was like, no, this is going to be scary, I would hesitate, but I would still do it. I would do it and just be like, oh, this isn't going to do anything for me. And it always did. Every single time.
The thing I like about Mara's story is in recovery, there's 1,000 ways to get up this mountain.
Yeah.
And you got to find the one that's going to work for you. And so many times in my recovery so far, I've had people go, I want exactly what you had, or I want that. Or people hear other people's story and go, that's what I need. Well, maybe that is what you need. But
they
want
your outcome, and they assume that your process is what they need, but they need their own process.
You've got to find your own process, right. And you can do it a la carte. You can take this, you can take that, and you did that. But the thing that makes me just so grateful that Mara came and shared her story is that she found her own way. And it wasn't through this is the first time I've heard her story, but I've never heard another story of recovery like hers.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I'm so proud of you for finding it, because you didn't have a recovery center. You didn't have a support family. You know, all these things where so many people put up roadblocks and go, well, I don't have this, so I'm not going to do it. You didn't let that stop you. You just kept moving forward.
Yeah. And I think I just was ready to listen, because that's one thing that I've been thinking a lot about, because I have been at Fit to Recover for so long, and somewhere along the last year, I forgot the reason I went there. Like, I started to take things more personal, or just like if someone didn't say hi to me a certain way, or if somebody said something to me that I wasn't saying hi to them. Mm-hmm. And it's been since the last year trying to navigate, because I didn't have to figure out timing, you know, it was just me. And now that I have my daughter and I completely forgot about my relationship. Like, that's one thing that I have put on the back burner, and she's just been so great that she's just like, hey, well, I'm still here. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes as addicts, we forget how much damage we do to the people that we love the most and forget they've been in the addiction with us. And I don't know. I don't know what shifted, because I've met some really amazing people. Like, I've met my best friend there, two of my best friends. Frank Young, I don't know if you guys know him, but he is one of my biggest spiritual teachers, too. Like, I just thought of him, he was there the first day I walked into Fit to Recover, and he was just this really big buff dude that I was like, oh my God, I wonder if I could ever lift like this guy. And once I got to like talk to him, that's not like, I just thought he was this like big bro-y gym guy, and he's not. Like, he talks about spirituality, talks a lot about the Four Agreements, and is now doing his own thing at Liberty Park. And then he has another space that I'm not aware of, but it's like, we're all so different that it's okay if you outgrow a place, or like, it's okay if you're not vibing with something. And I think not enough people talk about that. I think we need to be more aware that if you are at a treatment center or you are around people in recovery, like, you don't know how many days they have clean or not, and what that really does to your body. And mentally, more than not, you shut down without knowing it. If people remind you of something or certain songs, and I didn't know that, and now I'm very mindful
to listen, knowing your triggers,
to right. listen to more uplifting music, and to not stay, like, the days that I feel horrible, I'll put on a podcast, I'll put on
Project Recovery.
I was actually listening to that today, landscaping, and it kind of got me like so scared. I was like, I don't know if I can do that. Like, all of these people sound so put together, and like, maybe they rehearse, and I didn't, and then I just turned it off, and I was like, whatever, like, I asked.
Do you guys rehearse?
No.
I didn't know if that.
I was like, I asked in my personal prayer, and Ian was not aware of this, that I wish I would be brave enough to share my story, because I have gotten up to pick up a chip once or twice and just bolted. Like, I get nervous. I'm just like, I'm not going to do this. I can't do this. And it's just little steps that, it's okay not to be your best every day.
Sure.
Like, it's okay. And I didn't think that. I thought, okay, I'm better now. I have these, like, this long where I'm not obsessing about drugs and I have a little problem. Like, I need to just shut up and be grateful that I got to this point, when literally that's what's been killing me for the last 2 months, is to be like, hey, I feel anxious being around people because of COVID, or hey, like, I feel anxious about wanting to work out because I don't want to be as sore as I was in the beginning. And just knowing how scary it is if you don't pick up the phone if somebody's calling you. Like, I always used to just get so nervous if I gave my number out to somebody and they were about to relapse. If I didn't answer, that was going to be my fault.
It'd be on you.
When that's not the case. Mm-mm. And the more that I've gotten to know myself truly, without all the stupid bullshit that I tell myself, like, oh, I'm just this tough person. I've had a couple of people that are like, dude, like, I don't see that about you. Like, you're the most kind and loving person. And it's like, holy shit.
It's interesting something, how people
something
see
shifted.
Us
like, something
than we see
really
ourselves.
Shifted. And I do want to help.
It seems to me like in your story, sobriety in and of itself is important, but that's led you to this new relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
That person that was blocked off all those years growing up, it sounds to me like you're understanding who you are, your anxieties, your triggers, your strengths and weaknesses, and you're able to use that self-awareness to stay sober, but also to serve and give back, and now you're raising your daughter. It's very impressive. It's a lot of hard work you've done.
Well, and when you say that, I'm over here like, no, like, I've just tiptoed, like, I've dipped my toe in to see what possibilities of traumas that I can let go of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't ever think that I was going to be open to that, because there's so many different types of abuse that I've seen or that have happened to me that I didn't really think lingered into your adulthood. And now that I have gone back to therapy, and now that I have my daughter at the age that I was when she got pregnant, and she's has hormones, you know, and like thinks boys are cute. And I'm just like, oh no, like, we're not doing that. And I wanted to take this whole approach of like turning the internet off and just not letting her have a phone, or not letting her be a kid. And why did I do this if I don't want her life to be different? You know?
I think you said it best right there. And congratulations, because you did share your story today, and it's going to help a lot of people out there. And
I'm
very
so.
Proud of you, and I'm impressed by you and your recovery and all that you've gone through and all that you're doing. So thank you for stopping by. Last question. What's your go-to happy song right now?
Revolution De-Stress.
Okay. Go out there and Google that or on your iTunes, whatever you want. Dr. Matt?
I don't have a go-to happy song right now, I don't think. No, I've been listening to the Beach Boys.
Oh, I love it. Good Vibrations?
Yeah.
I love it. Hey, thank you guys very much for stopping by. Thank you. If people want to find out more information, Fit to Recovery, I'm sure they can just find that on Facebook. And then what about your women's retreat?
I think her thing is called House of Hearts, but I'm not positive. I can get back to you if you want to mention it in a different podcast, but just look up Tammy Goldthorpe. She's on Facebook, and because of COVID, they're not meeting right now, but they do a meditation once a week if you want to know anything about that.
And if you want to support Mara and you need some landscaping, you're doing landscaping.
Just privately.
Okay.
Just privately, just for friends right now. I'm not 100% confident, but you can give me a call at 385-267-2050.
Awesome. Thank you very much. You're listening to Project Recovery, a podcast about addiction. More importantly, it's about recovery. Brought to you by our friends at useonlyasdirected.org with a three-part solution. Speak out, opt out, and of course, throw out. Project Recovery, a KSL podcast.
The contents of this program are for informational purposes only. The program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician, licensed therapist, or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this program. KSL does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the program. Reliance on any information provided on the program is solely at your own risk.